Welcome back to Accelerando. I'm Paula Tuttle, and this week I'm talking to trumpeter Christopher Wilson. We'll hear him talk about his years at the United States Air Force Band, and then his move to Arkansas University in a tenure track position. Over these two decades, he also played in Memphis and Nashville symphonies, as well as orchestras in Maryland and Arkansas. He's now a resident of the Pittsburgh area, where he teaches at Duquesne University, and he holds the principal trumpet position in the Pittsburgh Opera Orchestra and the Pittsburgh Chamber Orchestra. He's also seen guesting in surrounding symphonies, including Wheeling Symphony and the Pittsburgh Symphony, and just living the dream of a trumpeter freelance musician. Chris, thanks for coming on the podcast.
Thanks for having me.
So am I right that your career started in the Air Force Band?
Yeah, right after I got done with my master's degree, I took an audition for the Air Force Band, won the position. The next thing you know, I'm going to boot camp and I'm moving to Washington, D.C.
Okay, so let's tell our listeners a short description of what life is like in a military band.
Let me back up to the audition process a little bit. It's very, very similar to the modern orchestra audition that we have today. And it's typically a cattle call, and there's lots of times for a trumpet position, there's, 100 candidates who are trying to audition and win the position. So that's very, very similar to how it's set up in the orchestra. And then as far as the job itself, you're paid full time and your job is to play music and serve the military in that capacity. So it's not all that different than playing in an orchestra. When I started my career in the Air Force Band, I was in the ceremonial brass. We did protocol functions all around DC, including playing funerals at Arlington Cemetery, the White House and the Pentagon. We'd had quintets that would do that. I switched over to the concert band at some point, about halfway through my 8 years there. So my first 4 years, it was mainly ceremonial duty. And then my last 4 years was in a concert setting. We went on biannual tours and we played concert across the country, did over 150 concerts a year around the Washington, D.C. area. So it was really set up a lot like, a modern orchestra music organization.
Did you move into a premier band when you said you were doing the concert band?
Yeah, so all of DC military bands are premier bands, and this includes the Army, Navy, Air Force, and Marines. And by premier band, you get a special rank of E6, which makes it a premier band. They're a little bit more competitive because it's higher pay. Within the Air Force Band, which I was in, there's a lot of different units within the Air Force Band. For example, you have the Strolling Strings, you have the Airman and Oat Jazz Ensemble, you have the Concert Band, you have the Ceremonial Brass, which basically plays ceremonial duties at Arlington Cemetery and at the White House. We also have a rock band in the Air Force Band. We combine the strings and the concert band at times to form an orchestra, the Singing Sergeants, which is the official chorus of the United States Air Force. So we're all in one building. No matter which unit you're in, considered premier band status, you get a special rank of E6 when you graduate from boot camp and you report to duty.
Okay, E6, you got me.
So E means enlisted. When you first enlist in the military, you're an E1 and then you work your way up. It takes people to achieve E6 a lot of times an entire career, a 20-year career. So if you're in a premier band, you get a special rank, and it's really the only job in the military where you have that sort of special enlisted rank. And so that's why it's an incentive to really world-class musicians, and that's why the bands are so competitive, and that's why the bands really are so good and effective. Everybody in the premier bands has to do boot camp, except the President's Own Marine Band. They do a two-week military training, trades and customs.
Is that because they might hurt something?
Maybe. Somehow they work that out where they don't have to go to boot camp. So that is probably an incentive to audition for the Marine Band.
Maybe it was part of their collective bargaining agreement.
Yeah, exactly.
They got rid of the boot camp. Which was better?
People trade all the time. If there's an availability and they want to try another job for a little while, you can. There's not like you have to re-audition. For me, I enjoyed the sit-down band, we'll call it the concert band, probably more. although there were a lot of cool things about being in the ceremonial brass as well. And your schedule was pretty light. Like if you wanted to freelance, you had evenings off because you didn't have to worry about concerts because the ceremonies happened during the day. And then the concert band, you're a little bit more tied down in the evenings and weekends, which sort of gets in the way of, you know, the chance to gig around a little bit.
When you say gig around, you get a chance to play with like the National Symphony or anything, do you?
Yeah, there's military bandsmen, as they call them, who do sub with National Symphony and all the other mini orchestras around there. And when I was in the Air Force Band, I played in the Maryland Symphony and I played in the Annapolis Symphony and the Alexandria Symphony. You know, that's one of the cool things about being in the band is certainly your military job always comes first, but there's opportunities to do other things in addition to what you're doing in the military.
Sounds like a great career move. So this is how you started out.
I was in the band for 8 years. Actually, I was there during that Bush 43 years. And in fact, some cool gigs that we did while I was in the band included, I did Ronald Reagan's funeral in 2004. The Queen of England came to the White House in 2008. Barack Obama's inauguration, which was very historic. I played all the inaugural balls that evening.
You just followed him around from ball to ball?
Yeah. The band followed him around basically, I think we played like 3 or 4 balls that night. Yeah, absolutely.
That sounds so fun.
Yeah.
You guys toured. What was your schedule like?
Yeah, so in the concert band, we go on 3-week tours biannually. So we would play a different venue every night for 6 weeks out of the year. And then most of the other concerts were local. We had a whole concert series in the summer. Christmas time, we would do a Constitution Hall performance.
Now, you said that you're all in the same building. Do you have your headquarters right there on the mall?
No, so like the Air Force Band is at Bowling Air Force Base, which is just right across the Potomac from Reagan International Airport. That's where the band building is.
It's where you rehearse.
It's where we rehearse.
It's where you store your uniforms,
things like that.
Yeah,
exactly.
I would love to go and see some of these events. You say there's a Christmas event that anybody can walk up and watch, or you have to purchase tickets, or?
Yeah, so all of our concerts are free. There's all kinds of concert series that are always happening. And of course, in the summertime, I mentioned it a little bit earlier, we do have a summer concert series where we play 2 concerts a week on the National Mall or the Air Force Memorial. Those are totally open to the public. We have a guest artist series in February where we feature really prominent guests. And I mentioned the holiday concerts.
And there probably is a website where you can find out where they are. I'll post the website in the notes. How about that? Let's do that.
Perfect.
So if you're auditioning for the Air Force or any of the bands, do you have to play taps?
Yeah, you do. In fact, it's one of the big excerpts. You know, when we talk about auditions, we're always talking about standard excerpts. Taps is a standard excerpt in military band auditions. And there's other repertoire. There's orchestra transcriptions that you'll see come up on these auditions, and also wind band repertoire that's really difficult for that particular instrument. But without a doubt, you have to be able to play a beautiful taps. In fact, I sounded taps over 500 times in Arlington Cemetery. So you certainly want to audition that because it's actually a very difficult tune to play. You can't hide behind a trumpet. Everybody's going to hear it. And what a lot of people don't understand is it's really easy to chip a note on the trumpet. Playing musical is a given. And so you just want to test that in an audition situation. But if you'll remember, speaking of taps, John F. Kennedy's funeral, the Army bugler, the Army trumpet player who sounded taps that day on a cold November day, chipped a note. And it was probably the most famous taps ever sounded. And there was something really special, actually, about that chipped note that, you know, sort of humanized the whole happening in our country. And it was a note that trumpet players don't typically chip. It was earlier on. We typically chip sometimes the higher note that's in the middle of taps, but this happened early on, and certainly he was waiting around. I think the procession was late that day, and on a cold day, playing a brass instrument with a cold mouthpiece, it's something that can easily happen. In fact, I've chipped on sounding taps, and if you sound a number of taps in Arlington Cemetery, you're bound to chip at some point. Yeah, but that was something particularly stirring about that. Go back and listen to that. It's really quite beautiful, actually.
So when you chip, that means that a note just gets a little bit less of a clean sound.
That's right. Yeah, the brass instrument is based on the harmonic series, and a lot of the notes are really close together. And so sometimes you can confuse the harmonic that you're playing, and it's really easy to have a little blip in your sound or a little chip or whatever you want to call it. You know it when you hear it.
You're sort of an authority on the history of TEPS. I saw one of your videos, and there's a story behind it.
When I was in the Air Force band, I worked with a guy named Yari Villanueva. He was also in the band, and he has become a historian on TEPS. In fact, he's been interviewed by the History Channel. You know, everything I've learned really about the history of TAPS is from Yari. He founded an organization called TAPS Across America in 2015, I believe. Anybody who could play trumpet or bugle on Memorial Day at 3 o'clock to sound TAPS. And he got that organized. And every year at Memorial Day now, that's become sort of a tradition. Amateur trumpet players and professional trumpet players alike will sound TAPS from their front porches all across America.
Are there other bugle calls that are on the audition list?
Yeah, there sometimes is. TAPS is the big one, but you know, sometimes To the Colors, which is a call that is played every day at 5 o'clock, the close of the day, I believe.
Do you think you could play it?
To the Colors sounds something like...
So what's the one at the beginning of the day?
Reveille?
Reveille.
Yeah.
Reveille is at the beginning of the day. Yeah. And TAPS is at the end of the day. And the
Correct.
Colors is...
To the Colors is at the end of the workday.
End of the workday.
Yeah. No, that's not Reveille. Reveille is...
What was that? Was that To the Colors?
No, that was maybe something about lunch. I can't remember. Here's Reveille.
That's pretty amazing. He's not using any valves.
Yeah, just open trumpet.
Just an open trumpet. You were in Arkansas for a while, and so tell us about Arkansas. What's the most memorable thing about Arkansas?
Oh, yeah. Well, Arkansas is where I grew up, actually. While I was in the D.C. Air Force Band, I got a doctorate in trumpet, and I thought when I retired that I would do some college teaching. Well, that came a little sooner than I thought, and I ended up getting out of the Air Force after 8 years and started full-time college teaching at Arkansas State University. So I basically went back home and taught there, had a really successful trumpet studio, really enjoyed it. The students were fantastic, got promoted to associate professor early, and also got promoted to full professor early. So that's somewhat unusual in 11 years' time to get the highest rank there at the university level. I was very successful with the trumpet studio, and of course I continued to perform as well. I played in the Nashville Symphony and Arkansas Symphony on the side. Those are parts of the reasons why I got promoted, because I was very active as a performer. And toward the end of my career at Arkansas State University, I won a position with the Pittsburgh Opera. And I was actually splitting time between Pittsburgh and Arkansas for about a 3-year period leading up to COVID. During COVID, I decided to step away from my full-time university job and start to build things around the Pittsburgh Opera in the Pittsburgh area. Of course, I had some personal things in my life. I met someone here and I got married. That made the decision fairly easy to moved to Pittsburgh. I guess this was during COVID, actually March, late March of 2020. And of course, COVID was, I don't know, March 18th, 17th, somewhere in there. On March 28th, my house was for sale in Arkansas because I was making the move here full time. I got a phone call saying that a tornado went through the town of Jonesboro, Arkansas, which is where Arkansas State was. And so I started following the news, and it looked like it was going right toward my house, and it definitely did. It wiped out my house. So it was a kind of a crazy way to start COVID, but that's what it was. A tornado swooped through there, and of course I went back and tried to retrieve all the things that I could possibly retrieve, and some things were not retrievable. But you know, that's the way it goes. Thank goodness for insurance.
And the for sale sign was long gone, right?
Yeah. It was no longer on the market after that.
What did it look like when you got there? Was it flattened?
I've got a picture right up here. I'll show you so we can visualize this.
I might have seen this on Facebook.
So we're looking at the picture right now, and this is my house. And Kyle and I, my wife and I, right here talking to a guy with a bulldozer. This was looked like. Pretty.
It's an aerial view of his neighborhood. Yeah. He's standing in the driveway, and he has part of a roof. The neighbors, the three to his right, are gone, and then the neighbor two to his left still has a full roof, but then it's just looks like scattered timber after that. So somebody's roof got saved almost.
Yeah, yeah. You know, it's interesting because even in my house, there were wine glasses that weren't touched. It's just truly bizarre how a tornado works. There were parts of my house that were totally devastated. There was other parts of my house, like where my daughter's room was, that was basically untouched. So it's really weird how that works.
Were there any trumpets that were lost in the storm?
No, I'd left Arkansas with all my trumpets, thankfully, because I was sort of getting ready to move here, but we had an opera that was supposed to start on March 13th.
It was Carmen.
Carmen, yeah. Carmen got canceled. So I had all my trumpets with me, so that was not one of the things that I lost in this.
I'm really sorry about that. But it's a great story later.
Yeah, yeah, it was.
As they say.
Pretty crazy.
I think you've been pretty popular at clinics, or at least you have done a lot of clinics. Or is this something that you continue to do? Is it built up?
During COVID, I probably did more than I ever had in my life. Of course, everybody was doing it. You know, I was teaching an online class, a lot of different universities. I even started during COVID, called it the Military Band Trumpet Summit. So I was working with students, talented students who were interested in auditioning for military bands, sort of started a business out of that a little bit. As a result of COVID, I think, gotten into content creation, and I've got a YouTube channel, Chris Wilson Trumpet, that I do trumpet tutorial videos about over a range of topics.
You might do just an etude that is consistently asked for at a state band audition every year.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I'm very passionate about auditions and audition preparation, and that comes out in the YouTube channel. I do like to record high school excerpts sometimes for students so that they can prep for their high school auditions and also professional auditions, both orchestra and military band.
When it comes to orchestra audition, do you have any basic advice to people? And maybe they'll come to your YouTube to get more, but maybe just a concise example of what you would advise somebody who's planning on an audition.
Wow, that's certainly a gigantic rabbit hole that you can dive down. But, you know, the thing that I always tell my students with auditions is you have to be patient. You have to learn how to audition. A lot of times it's different than actually playing in the orchestra or the military band, or whatever it is that you're auditioning for. The art of an audition is something that takes most of us many, many years and many, many tries. I think what happens is we fail, and then a lot of people give up at that point. Failure is just part of the process. I don't know very many people who had really successful auditions in the beginning. They're out there, but they're very, very few. It takes a lot of work, a lot of preparation, and through my class that I've taught, I developed an entire system week by week on what you should expect during audition preparation. And a lot of that comes out in my videos on my YouTube channel as well.
How many weeks ahead of an audition do you start a process?
You know, typically you get the list 10 to 12 weeks out. And what I tell students is that your initial inclination is to immediately start mindlessly practicing the excerpts. And I really believe that you should take a week or two to not touch the excerpts. I think you should look at the excerpts and figure out the skills, assess the skills that you're going to need in order to get through the list. And you start working on that from a fundamental standpoint.
That's a really great point. I would also like to ask, the day of the audition, how much do you play?
Yeah, that's a really good question. You know, brass players, we can run out of gas if we do too much, if we warm up too much. And certainly I've learned this the hard way. My very first audition, I crashed and burned. I advanced, I think. Yeah, I did advance, but I had no chops by the time the second round came. And so that was a learning experience in and of itself. So, you know, for me, I have a routine that I do, and it's typically at the hotel, like about a 30-minute routine. I like to show up to the audition where I'm feeling really good about my chops and I'm warmed up and ready to go. Because you never know at an audition if you draw the first number or what the case is or if there's a warm-up space. You know, I remember I auditioned for the Marine Band when I was in college, and it was a cattle call, and you all warmed up in this gigantic band room back in those days. and it was very unnerving. I like to show up warmed up because you don't know what's going to happen when you get there. And
right, that's, you might that's be a big
first. One. Yeah, you might be first. Absolutely.
So you better be warmed up. I think the string players could learn a lot from brass players. It's not a great idea for them to over practice either. You have to pare down your warm up to a 30-minute plan.
Yeah. At least that's works for me. And obviously we're all a little bit different and you have to figure out what works best for you. And that's part of the process. And I think taking auditions, with every audition that you take, you learn something new. And I've made it a practice both before I was a professional and in my professional career to take regular auditions. It not only helps me, but helps me teach students how to audition. I'll say this, being on the other side of the screen, and I've learned a lot from that side of the screen too, that I have tutorial videos about as well.
Have you ever sat on an audition panel and listened to people play taps?
I have, yes.
Was that microscopic, getting down to every note?
Yeah, we're very, very nitpicky. It's got to be a certain way. You can say this about any excerpt. There's multiple ways to play a certain excerpt, but there's also standards and parameters at which they're to be played. There's room to be soloistic on certain excerpts, and other excerpts you have to, you know, take a step back a little bit. And certainly that's a big part of the process as well.
What's the most common question you get from trumpet students when you're at a clinic or in a masterclass situation?
Oh gosh, how high can you play?
Really?
Yeah, that's a trumpet thing, I think. And
is that like when you go to a school and it's kids that don't really play, they'll say, how high can you play?
Or younger players will say that. And you know, my answer to that is whatever the composer writes, I'll figure out how to get there. It would be my answer. The biggest thing in clinics and classes that I like to teach is sound concept. We all know this. Whatever instrument you're playing, if you don't sound beautiful on it, you're not going to get very far with it. So I spend a lot of time trading my secrets with others about how to sound beautiful. And, you know, with my students, I tell them everything that I know. It's my hope that all of my students are more successful than I was.
Do you advocate the trumpet students that you have that they create an online presence, like something like social media, have a YouTube channel, have a website, or is this something that you only find appropriate for established players?
Yeah, that's a really interesting question. Certainly you can do anything that you want to do with your social media. I will say that in my space, and it's a small niche, there's not a lot of quality stuff out there. I think you see a lot of amateur type players or musicians who are authoritative figures online, which can confuse students. I would just say as a student, as an aspiring musician, I think you want to be very, very careful what you put out there. I look at videos that I did even a year ago and I'm embarrassed by them. The video making part of this is a learning process. Content creation, it's not just good content, but how you present it. That takes time. And a lot of times the YouTube platform, for example, is a trial and error sort of thing. You will get better the more content you put out there. But I think the problem with somebody who's not a professional that puts stuff out there, it can be misleading. And that's the part that worries me with what my students see and hear. You have to be able to discern, mature enough to discern what's the good stuff and what's not. I didn't get a website until, you know, as a professional. You know, my daughter, for example, who's majoring in digital marketing, one of her projects was to start a website. And I think that's very beneficial. If you want to start a website, I mean, you know, it's never too early. You know, you really want to market yourself. You want to put yourself in the best possible position. And I think certainly a website can point people to your projects. And I think that's a great thing.
What's the number one thing you require or advise your private students?
This might not just be trumpet specific, I mean, just as a musician in general. You know, it's not like building a house. You know, you practice and then the next day you come back to it and your house is still built, right? You have to rebuild every day. And so the very first notes of the day are the very first notes that I've been playing since the very first day that I played trumpet. And I start really slowly and I work on playing with a beautiful sound and rebuilding my sound each and every day and coming back to that first. And that's how you really begin to gain traction as a trumpet player and as a musician. It's not like you can pick up the instrument and it's right where you left it. You have to rebuild.
Okay, I have a question for you.
Okay.
At what point do you tell your students that when they're playing also Sprach Zarathustra, that they have to be able to also ping pong and ride the Segway.
Yeah, I assume you're referring to one of my videos that I put out during COVID. So I have several videos out there where I'm riding a Segway, you know, like a little hoverboard thing, but it's a Segway. I got my son that for Christmas, and so I started doing errands around the house with the Segway, and I actually got quite good at the Segway. So I would go do laundry, and then I'd ride it to the other end of the house, do dishes or whatever, all while on a Segway. And so then began to practice trumpet while I'm riding a Segway, recorded some videos doing that. I even took an audition to be on the CBS Sunday morning news show playing the Rika fanfare that Wynton Marsalis made famous on the CBS Sunday morning show, and they were asking for audition tapes. So I did one where I was outdoors and during COVID and played the fanfare while riding the Segway. Another video I did was I'm pretty good at ping pong. And I'm pretty good at trumpet too, of course. I'm pretty good at riding the Segway. So I combined all three and I played also Sprach Zarathustra. And that certainly got a lot of play on social media. That was kind of my first big one.
It was cute. But what happened with the CBS video, the Wynton Marsalis video? Did you get picked?
You know, I did not. And we're all stunned. They didn't want to see somebody on a Segway riding across right by a river, that fanfare. So yeah, it did not get picked up, unfortunately.
Oh, what do they know?
Yeah, exactly. They really missed out on that one.
Did somebody else play higher?
I don't think so. I don't think so.
Well, the one thing I can say in knowing you is that you've had an unusual trajectory of your career. Do you know anybody else that has done it like this?
You know, not exactly. I do think that I have an interesting perspective in that I've been in a professional military band. I've taught full-time college teaching, tenure-track positions, and I've freelanced, and I played in an opera orchestra. Much to my surprise, I've really come to enjoy the all-encompassing musical effect of opera.
Sort of the best of all worlds.
Yeah.
You can follow Christopher Wilson Trumpet on YouTube to view all of Chris's tutorials and trumpet videos. Thanks for listening. And if you enjoyed this podcast, please share it with a friend or someone you think will enjoy it. Or maybe you'd like to subscribe to Accelerando. We're on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, and Google Podcasts. Don't forget to check the show notes at accelerandocast.com for more information and links pertaining to today's show or any of the shows. You can also leave a message and listen to all of the episodes at the website. Well, that's it for this week's episode. Thanks for supporting live music. You can hear Chris when the opera performs at the Benedum and on his porch every Memorial Day. Have a great week, and we'll see you next time.